Good evening. This is TNT Radio, brought to you by Bloggin' Broadcasting Service, and I'm Nevin Campanella, your net reporter. Yes, we are about a minute late. Not bad, folks. Really not bad at all. We are getting better. Last night, I tried to discuss with you what was going on with thewordbook.com. And you remember I had some suspicions about it. And I dug a little further. Guess what? Thewordbook.com makes no bones about telling you that its material is coming directly from Wikipedia. Why? What is going on? I have no idea, folks, why that is sitting out there. What it does is Wikipedia has what's called a GNU free documentation license, and it makes reference to that license every time it uses material from Wikipedia. Now, I don't know if this is just a third-party person who's taking advantage of that open license and saying, okay, we'll be an encyclopedia also. You guys do the work, and we'll just use your material. And it's okay. They're getting away with it. No one is complaining. And it may be, and I do believe this now, that Wikipedia and thewordbook.com are connected. They got to be. They have got to be connected. Okay, where are we headed? You know, we have a new blog site where we now post all the material. folks, this is getting to be a bit of a joke. The we is me and one very cool guy in the Netherlands, who, by the way, went to sleep about an hour ago. He was very sleepy and tired, and it's about 3 a.m. out there right now. He stayed up very long. His name is Gerard, and he does the Foreign Office News, and he does it very well. So when I say we, I'm talking about me and this other guy. But we do have a place to post right on Bloggin' Service now. We've given up our old blog spot. If you go there, what you'll see is a link to the new place. The easiest way to get there is simply to go to the index page of Bloggin' Service, and you will see on the page TNT Radio blog. Just click on it. It'll take you right there. There's not a whole lot there right now. I put in my notes from yesterday, and there is one initial entry that tells possible reporters how to actually post. One thing I wanted to say about that is all quoted material from now on will be in a box. It'll have a light blue background. And if there is an embedded link, it will be in red. I'll probably reorganize as I go along, but right now this seems to be the best approach. Okay, where are we at? I spend so much time lately, you know, in general discussions of issues, I kind of missed the news or the current news. But let's get through March 31st in history. In 1774, on March 31st, the Kingdom of Great Britain orders the port of Boston, Massachusetts, closed in the Boston Port Act. Well, of course, that was the trigger. That was a big trigger for leading directly to the American Revolution. Now, something that makes me nuts occurred on March 31st in history, and it happened in 1918. Daylight savings time goes into effect in the United States for the first time. And talk about screw up. I mean, Can you keep your clock straight?
That's an all-American.
Okay, I'll give you the hint. We all know it's spring forward and fall back. That's an easy one. But my complaint is, why do we have to change the clock? I don't care which one they pick. Standard or daylight savings. Pick one and stick to it. Instead of making everybody crazy twice a year. I personally don't see the reason for it. I do like daylight savings better than standard because it gives me more daylight at the end of the day. And as a fact, if you go back, probably not more than 15 or 20 years, there was a time when we stayed on daylight savings for, I think, an entire year because of the oil embargo. That probably was in the early 70s. 1933, March 31st in history, the CCC is established with a mission to relieve rampant unemployment. That's the Civilian Conservation Corps. I don't have a whole lot of familiarity with it other than my father. When he was a young man, wound up going into the Civilian Conservation Corps, and it did give a lot of young men something to do and put food in their belly, and it took them out of the house and usually out of a home that was suffering because of not having enough food for who was there. And March 31st in history, in 1933, actor Brandon Lee is accidentally killed during the filming of The Crow. You know, there's been a lot of controversy about that accidental shooting. You know, father, Bruce Lee, also had a rather mysterious death. And then Brandon Lee winds up with this mysterious death. Seems like a lot of mystery, doesn't it? Maybe a little bit too much mystery. I'm not paranoid. I don't want you to think that. I am not paranoid. But when you have both a father and a son with this really oddball death around him, you got to start wondering. By the way, I love the movie The Crow. Absolutely fantastic. I saw the follow-up movie. I can't remember who was in it. It did not have near the dark drama of The Crow. It really didn't. And births, March 31st in history. 1943, an important year for me because that's also the year I was born. Christopher Walken, American actor, was born. Now, you know Christopher. How could you not know Christopher Walken? He has made so many fantastic movies. Usually he likes to play a bad guy. But sometimes he plays a good guy. In one couple of movies, he played an angel. Of course, he was an angel with an axe to grind. He was trying to grind it inside everybody's head. Let me read this to you. Walken initially trained as a dancer in musical theater before moving on to more serious roles in theater and then film. You know what, folks? I have a hard time picturing Christopher Walken as a dancer, but if you look at his body shape, you start recognizing, you know, the guy, when he was younger, the guy was pretty thin. He really was. He's been nearly in over, let's see, he's been in nearly 100 movies and television shows since 1953. Some of the things he's been in, let's see, he was in Pulp Fiction, I've seen that, Brainstorms for that, A View to Kill, Batman Returns, Catch Me If You Can, that's a very recent one. Now, I haven't seen Around the Bend, that was in 2004, and he did win the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in The Deer Hunter in 1978, where he played a disturbed Vietnam vet alongside Robert De Niro. He was nominated again in 2002 for Catch Me If You Can. I really didn't think that his performance in that was that great, but he was nominated. Well, he has a considerable body of work in theater also, and he's been in over 100 plays. So the guy has got a lot of talent. Now, there's probably one thing about Christopher Walken that you don't know. You're not going to recognize the date I give you. It occurred in November of 1981, Christopher Walken was a good friend of Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood. And the day that she fell off, that Natalie Wood fell off the boat and drowned, he was on the yacht. Now, that yacht was docked off of Catalina Island. I don't know. It was a very strange occurrence. I don't think there was anything shady about what went on. I just think it was an extremely unfortunate situation. And believe it or not, he also starred in Christopher Walken starred in three music videos. Okay, where are we going? We are going to Michael Conlon. This is out of Reuters. Now, there are going to be some of you out there that are going to have trouble with what I'm about to tell you. This is today, this is now. It came off of Reuters this morning. Some of you are going to have a hard time with it. However, and I'm going to read it to you and then we'll discuss it. A study of more than 1,800 patients who underwent heart bypass surgery has failed to show that prayer, specially organized for their recovery, had any impact. In fact, the study found some of the patients who knew they were being prayed for did worse than others who were only told they might be prayed for, though those who did the study said they could not explain why. Now, keep this in mind, folks. You've got to understand that if a change occurs in an experiment in either direction, it's significant. It is significant. So I want to go back through these sentences in the way that Reuters is reporting it. Let's go back to this first one. Prayers specially organized for the recovery, okay? 1,800 patients who underwent heart bypass surgery has failed to show that prayer, especially organized for the recovery, had any impact. Well, guess what? They negate that in the next sentence by saying, well, it did have impact, but the other direction. So what's going on? And the researchers said they could not explain why. Don't take this particular study to heart, because it is so poorly written up from the information I have that there is no real way to explain anything. Obviously, prayer had an impact. By their own statement, it says they were being prayed for, did worse than others who were only told they might be prayed for. Now, folks, that's called an impact. Something does happen with prayer. Now we need to understand how it occurs and under what circumstances it occurs. So it definitely has an impact by their own admission. So they say one thing in the first sentence, and right away they negate it in the next. That's the national news for you. I do not have the actual study. I'm simply reporting to you probably what some dumb reporter wrote down. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what's going on. Now, after 30 days, the death rates and incidence of major complications was about the same across all three groups. On that basis, you could say that prayer did not affect the death rate or incidence of major complication. Now, my next one, I've got this titled Off the Charts. This goes back to yesterday. It comes from the date. From the date in history, March 30th, and it's about Alistair Cook. Now, why am I bringing it up today? Because there is something about it that is so strange, I find it difficult not to put on the air. So first I'm going to give you the easy stuff. He was, in 1968, by the way, he was standing close to Robert F. Kennedy. Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and he was a witness to the events that followed. Now, what is he most known for? Personally, the man was an extreme, what I would call an extreme gentleman, but I love the guy's voice. And you may remember him very well in the very early 70s when he was kind of like the MC of Masterpiece Theater. Now, that was a public broadcasting service show of a very high quality of British television. And he did that for 22 years. He retired in the early 90s. He was a well-known figure in this role. However, because he was so well-known, a lot of parodies were done about him, and he took it very gracefully. Even Sesame Street did a piece called Monsterpiece Theater. It was pretty cool. In 73, Alistair was awarded an honorary knighthood. Now, however, because he had lost his British nationality, he literally immigrated to the United States. I think he did that in World War II. He could not be called Sir Alistair because he was no longer a Briton. He also did many, many television series, and he did one about the United States and its history. It was very, very good. I saw it. It was also followed, I think, by a book about the same title. So, what do we know about him? He was a gentleman. He had a wonderful voice. He was very direct, always a gentleman. You always knew that was what was coming out of his mouth is what was in his head. And you know, he never, for all his success, he never put on airs. For more than 50 years, he lived in a rent-controlled apartment in Manhattan. easily outliving several property owners and all fellow tenants. He died at the age of 95 in 2004. He died, I think it was complications of lung cancer. Now, why am I going back to yesterday about Alistair Cook? Because of the really weird, weird circumstance that occurred after his death. On December 22nd, 2005, the New York Daily News reported that the bones of Alistair Cook and many other people had been, listen to this, surgically removed. They took his bones out of his body, had been surgically removed and stolen by body snatchers working for a tissue recovery firm prior to his cremation. It has been alleged that the thieves stole the stolen body parts for use in dental and bone implants. What makes the story even more bizarre is the fact that the cancer that Cook was suffering from prior to his death had spread to his bones. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was a complication of the cancer that he had. It spread through into all his bones, making them unsuitable for transplant and implant therapies. So, how weird can you get? We've got body snatchers going on in the United States. And remember, this is just last year, last December of 2005. Weird, huh? Okay, some off the wall news. I haven't gotten to this in quite a while. This comes out of Thailand. Health authorities in Thailand began warning teenage girls in January of the dental risk of do-it-yourself orthodontics. What it is they're colorful metallic teeth braces worn for fashion to match girls' outfits. So these young ladies, I don't know where they buy them. They buy some sort of metallic brace in different colors, and they change the brace according to the outfit that they're wearing. Could there be a problem? You better believe it. It is really not something you want to do. If you're going to mess around with orthodontics, you better have somebody around you that knows what they're doing, you're going to wind up in trouble really, really fast. In Lunar New Year celebrations in January in China, 120 million rural peasants traveled to and from cities via jam-packed trains, despite meager restroom facilities. Now, as a result, according to Reuters Dispatch, there was a massive holiday run on adult diapers. So I guess if you're going to make that trip in China, you better get yourself some, what do they call them? Depends. I think that's the name of them. Good news for college kids. In January, history professor David Wheel of Canada's University of Prince Edward Island offered, this is weird, folks, he offered a B-minus grade to any student in his overcrowded class if they would just go away, and 295 accepted. However, the administration found out, and they were not real happy. He retired last year, but he did return to teach that one course. Next, former Fairfield University student William Rome, 24, won $111,000 from the school in a February verdict because he was improperly suspended 4 years ago. At the time, Rom was accused of entering a woman's restroom, fighting, ripping posters off wall, dumping water on students from a second floor, smashing a bathroom mirror, running naked on campus, and underage drinking, and subsequently vomiting in the dorm. Now, they suspended him for that. They suspended him, which I would have suspended him for a lot less than that, but somehow our crazy court system awarded him $111,000. What is that telling all the other students at Fairfield University? Do whatever you want, because if they stop you, you can sue them and you will win. Next on the list of oddball news, the head of the Joe Richardson Comprehensive School in Dangham, England, prohibits students from raising their hands in class. Now, this is according to their Daily Telegraph report. And the purpose is to keep those not called on from feeling victimized. You know, folks, we're getting strange. Listen to what I'm reading to you here. They are prohibiting students who know answers from raising their hand. Why? Because it's going to make those who don't know the answer feel bad. You know what? That is really dumb. That's about as dumb as you can get. Okay, onward and upward with the odd news. And rules drawn up in February by the Welsh Assembly call for schools in Wales to ban all kissing, even in school plays. But an assembly spokesman said Romeo could give Juliet a peck on the cheek. You know, I'm not gonna hammer on that one. You know, I know why they did it. I do know why they did it. You know, when we don't control our own behavior, eventually someone's going to control it for us. That's right, folks. That's what happens. You don't control your own behavior, someone else is going to do it for you. Now, I am well aware, because I worked around a lot of school districts when I was working as a psychologist. Let me tell you what goes on in those halls. It's like looking at an R-rated movie on television. Yeah. And there's a lot more than kissing going on, let me tell you. I understand their frustration. So they find what they're doing is they are setting a rule down that says there will be no contact between the sexes. That's about what it amounts to. And maybe we have to do that. We live in strange times. In February, Bolivia's foreign minister proposed to include coca leaves as part of school breakfast programs, noting that they contain many times more calcium than does milk. Now, you got to understand, coca leaves are not going to make kids buzzy. It has to be processed as cocaine. So just plain eating coca leaves is not going to make them nutso. And in November, the Coffee Industry Association of Brazil proposed to help fund a breakfast program for 1 million school children as young as age 6. Listen to this. Provided that the meal includes coffee. Now, I want to break for a second here. I want to change hats. I want to speak to you now as a psychologist, someone who's worked with a lot of children. Now, I know that there are a lot of people out there who say, oh, my God, don't do this to children. Don't. They should not have coffee. Caffeine, you know, and all the bad stuff about caffeine. Have you ever heard of something called paradoxal medication? Well, let me tell you about it. There are some children who, in fact, are hyperactive, and they are given Ritalin. Now, under normal circumstances, where a child is not hyperactive, if you were to give a normal child Ritalin, it would not slow them down. But in fact, it would speed them up. So if you give coffee to a hyperactive child, it's not going to be wired. It's going to slow them down. And this has been demonstrated numerous times. One way to get children off of Ritalin is by offering them a couple of cups of coffee during the day. My personal opinion, I would much rather a hyperactive child drink a little bit of coffee than take that damn Ritalin. Drugs are bad, folks. I don't care whether they're illegal or legal. The way we deal with drugs in this country is awful. It really is. I'm asking all of you to take a hard, cold look at alternative approaches to medication. Next on the list, I have no idea what I'm about to read. It's titled Home Sweet Home. Developer Ryan Pedram was finally ordered to stop work on his new 3-story home in the Bronx in New York City after he had begun building it flush with a disputed property line, including constructing one cinder block wall to encompass the trunk of an oak tree that ostensibly belonged to his neighbor. He had figured on winning the property dispute and removing the tree. His plan in case of loss was not reported. Also in Brooklyn, a judge recently allowed industrialist Simon Taub to install sheetrock walls in several rooms in his home as a temporary solution in a pending divorce case to allow both husband and wife to share the house. Well, you know, folks, it's getting weird. Literally, what the judge had to do was suspend probably some city regulations. They put up temporary sheetrock walls so that they could live together but not have to see each other. Remind you of War of the Roses? Yeah, me too. Next, this is from this is out of London. When Travis Frey, 33, was charged in Council Bluffs. I don't know what I'm reading here. This can't possibly be out of London. Scratch that first part. When Travis Frey, 33, was charged in Council Bluffs, Iowa, in February with kidnapping his wife, she gave police a contract of wifely expectations. I don't know what that means. Oh, that he had allegedly written for her, subsequently published on the smokinggun.com, which called it a contract for the ages. Oh, this has got to be interesting. In painstaking detail, the husband prescribed the micromanagement of her life, including what she would wear in public and to bed, and the exact time she would be available for specified sexual relations. Instructions on hygiene and body shaving were given. 8 explicit, non-subservient, wifely reactions were banned. She could earn good behavior days with exemplary performance, but would lose them on specified misbehaviors, including complaining about the contract. This guy's a nutcase, folks. But who else is a nutcase here? Hey, this contract went in before the marriage. So you really got 2 nutcases here, folks. Anyway, it's now in the hands of the court. Workers discover Cold War stockpile of supplies inside the Brooklyn Bridge. This is not unusual, folks. During the Cold War, a lot of places, from government, from cities, from townships, they dug deep, deep vaults. And because of the Cold War, you know, everybody was worried about the Russians are going to bomb us, so on and so forth, and they stockpiled it. Let me read this little short clip from New York. This is, by the way, this is off the AP wire. Workers inspecting the structural foundations of the Brooklyn Bridge uncovered a Cold War-era trove of basic provisions that were stockpiled among fears of nuclear attack. The stash discovered in a vault under an entrance ramp included water drums, canisters of calorie-packed crackers, paper blankets, medical supplies, and drugs used to treat shock. However, I got to tell you something about the water drums. It's not in my notes, but I do remember the article. Those water drums leaked. Yeah, big time. They had a problem with them. Let's talk about the Cold War a bit, just a little bit. Those were strange times, and I remember as a child going through classroom drills. You remember the sirens going off? If you're old enough, you will. The sirens would go up in the city. They were testing the sirens in case there was an attack. Well, what did they do? What did they do in a classroom? Now picture this. The expectation is a nuclear bomb is going to go off. And so what do they have children do? Put them down in a shelter a mile under the ground? No. They got under their desk. That's what we did. That was it, folks. Kind of a run for the hills approach to let's save ourselves from the nuclear bomb. It was really weird. Extremely, extremely weird. I had no idea what getting under the desk would do, but somebody thought it was useful. How about this one? Viagra for Stallion, who wouldn't horse around. That's the title of it. This comes out of Berlin. I might have known. The Germans are always a little cuckoo about this kind of thing. A German court ordered Viagra to be given to a stallion after his new owner claimed he was impotent and refused to pay the full asking price. The buyer of the horse, called Beater, paid just a tenth of the price of over 4,000 euro dollars. By the way, that's 4,900 American dollars. Claiming it had only one testicle and failed to get frisky with a female pony. A vet found the testicle after an examination. And when the stallion was given the potency drug, it emerged he was fully functional. The court ordered the buyer to pay the full price. Weird, huh? Oh, it gets weirder yet. I'm going to give you another one. This one is a little bit sick. But I'm going to read it to you. It comes out of Reuters, by the way. And it's out of Mexico City. A Mexican soldier shot dead 2 subordinates for refusing an order to clean up their base on the country's Caribbean coast. How bizarre can you get? Alonzo German was taken into military custody after shooting the two on Friday night at the Army base near the resort of Cancun. He said he did not know what ranks the soldiers held. Officers at the base referred inquiries to Mexico's Defense Ministry, where no one was immediately available for comment. No, they were all taking a siesta. Who's going to comment on that? By the way, that occurred the Friday just prior to March 21st, which would have been around the, 17th of March. Kind of a day that sticks in my head, but I can't remember why. I'll have to ask my wife why March. Oh, now I remember. March 17th. Yeah, that was a Friday. What was it? It was St. Paddy's Day. Why do I remember it? We left Utah to move to California on March 17th. Boy, it's sure quiet behind me. Usually it's so noisy I can hardly hear myself think. What's going on? I'm looking, and it's very quiet back here. Doug is at his computer, and Don is gone. I have no idea. Anyway, the next one, gentlemen, I want you to pay close attention. This is conviction in body enlargement scam. By the way, this comes out of Jerusalem. An Israeli court sentenced a man to 2 years in prison Sunday for operating a fake clinic that offered penis enhancement and so-called medical treatments to make people taller, which, of course, failed to work. Simon Soffer told dozens of clients he was a doctor and said he could add up to 10 centimeters, which is almost 4 inches, to their height. Or, listen to this, 2.4 inches to their genitals. Wow. I mean, how stupid do you have to be to believe this? I mean, you people go to this person and they believe this crap? I guess so. His clinic was in operation since 1999, was not medically supervised. He has appealed his conviction. He pre-charged patients in American dollars anywhere from $1,125 to $3,430 to increase their height with a Russian-made treatment method. He told the court genitalia enlargements were not performed despite advertisements that promised them. People who sought to become taller were suspended from the air by their arms and legs or had their bodies stretched with weights. My God, it sounds like torture. Others were poked with needles or given food supplements and exercise reform at home. Now, I'm going to read you a quote. This is by, I don't know who's making the quote, but it says, only a lunatic could take a person who has not been checked and hang them upside down. That's what this guy was doing. I mean, this guy, you know, yeah, he's a scam artist, but you've got to wonder about the people who went to him. Bizarre, huh? The scam is bizarre, but I'll tell you what, folks, the people that went to him are twice as bizarre. Anyway, he got sentenced to 2 years in jail. Next one. I'm going to read this whole thing. It's important. I read the strange news. And what I'm about to read to you now is something that some of you really need to pay attention to. You might get something useful out of it. Especially you people who believe you've got to work 24 hours a day. The title of this is called Workaholic Struggle to Say No to Work. Quote, Sam used to sneak into his office before dawn so no one would know how many extra hours he worked. Charles goes on all-night work binges to meet deadlines. And Susan can't say no to volunteer projects, social clubs, bridge games, choral singing, lectures, and classes. Even one or excuse me, each one is a member of Workaholics Anonymous, a 12-step recovery program for compulsive workers based upon the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each one opted to keep their identity secret. You know, I want to interject something here. As soon as I light the cigarette, you'll notice that lots of different types of programs nowadays all have these 12-step recovery programs, just like Alcoholics Anonymous. Are they just monkeying around? I mean, are they just copying? Is it all BS? No. There's a simple fact of life for people who are drinking too much. AA is the only known alcoholic treatment program that actually can demonstrate consistent results. That's right. That 12-step program, whatever it is composed of, I know a few of the steps, it seems to work, at least in terms of behaviors that are driving other people nuts. Let's get back to workaholics. Workaholic. It's been called the addiction that society applauds, said Mike, a physician and member of the group known as WA. Well, yeah. You know why society applauds it? Because business makes a lot of money on it. Yeah. You better believe it. They'll work you to death. They'll work you into the ground. They'll work you until there's nothing left. Of course, they're going to applaud it. Absolutely, they're going to applaud this addiction because the more you're addicted, the more money they make. People brag about it and say, I'm a workaholic. But workaholics burn out. And then you've lost them. Or they become very dysfunctional and bitter and cynical and can actually be corrosive within the organization. Workaholics Anonymous keeps no central count of members, but organizers estimate dozens of weekly meetings are held in the U.S. as well as in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, and Britain. The group also sells about 100 books about workaholics, about 100 books a month. And they do have a website, but you know what? I don't have the website link in front of me. WA's roots go back to 1983 when a New York corporate financial planner and a school teacher founded a group based on AA but designed to fight compulsive working. And guess what, folks? I'm compulsively out of time. Good night. I love you all.
You have been listening to BB Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to Endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.